There are an estimated 1.7 million dreamers in the United States, young adults brought to this country as children. Thanks to three of them, to my left, Laura Mineiro, Jose Perez, and Erika Rosales, for sharing their stories and sharing their dreams today. Thanks also to my Wisconsin Eye co-worker, Rachel Sanders, for joining the show. Rachel, you want to ask the first question?
Yeah, thank you, Steve. All right, well, welcome everyone, and I just would like to invite you to share your personal stories. How did you become a dreamer? And maybe, Laura, would you like to take it first, and we can go around?
Yeah, sure, definitely. Okay. So I came to the U.S. when I was five, and I was actually born in Guadalajara, Jalisco, Mexico, and it was a little tough for my parents back in Mexico, and so I think one thing we don't talk about in the narrative that we don't commonly share is what pushes people to leave their home countries. Many times people have the desire to return. Many times people have the desire to have been able to stay in their home countries, and that was the case for my parents. But we also lived in one household with three families. So my aunts, who were single mothers, two of my aunts, also lived in the same household as I did. And that's just a little bit to paint the picture of what it was like to live in Mexico for us. And we didn't have a lot of opportunity for upward mobility. My dad never graduated high school. He was like one day away from getting his high school degree. And my mom didn't get further than a sixth grade education. And so they didn't have a lot of money where we were, and they desired a better future for me. And that's how I ended up coming to California. So that's really where I grew up. So I have a little bit of a different story in terms of how I grew up and how I came here from both Jose and Erika. But I think it was definitely tough growing up knowing that you were undocumented, because there was definitely fear of deportation. I definitely feel like I had to be more careful than some of my peers. But I think a lot of the challenges for me mostly came when I tried to apply for college. And that was really challenging because I went through the K-12 education. I did all the things I was told I needed to do, and I had dreams of going to college. And I applied and got in, but there was no access to financial aid for me. So I didn't have access to FAFSA. And one thing for me, we did have access to in-state tuition, something that Wisconsin residents here don't have access to. So undocumented students here in Wisconsin cannot get in-state tuition, and that makes college that much more harder to go to. It makes it less accessible. And so I took advantage as much as I can. I definitely had to take, go to community college first, and then I went to a CSU system, which is a little cheaper than maybe a University of California system. There were just a lot of turns that I had to take along the way to get to where I finally am now, which is a PhD program in counseling psychology.
PhD in counseling.
Yeah, at University of Wisconsin-Madison. And one of the things that I have to say is the only reason why I was able to move out of state from California to attend a top program in counseling psychology was because I had DACA. So I want to clarify
that. So you enrolled in DACA.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's not the reason why I got in. I think there's a misperception that, our slots are saved for undocumented students at college and they're taking away from other people getting into those programs. No, programs did not check my status for me to be able to get in, right? Mm-hmm. But once I got in, I very similarly faced the same issues, right? Like, it's difficult to be able to, you know, there's no accessibility to loans, but because I had DACA, I've been able to work and pay for my studies. And that's definitely harder for people who don't have deferred action. So you see less people who don't have DACA in master's or PhD programs. So it's definitely given me some privileges, I think, over some of my undocumented peers.
Thank you. Jose?
Hi, well, my name is Jose Perez. I came here in 1993 when I was 15 years old. Came with the older brother, always having in mind that I wanted to better myself, you know, go to school here. And also be able to provide and help my family back in Mexico, because we never owned a house. We always jumped from one house to another, from family members. So it was always difficult for me, so I wanted to be, I felt like I was the man to help my family, my mother especially. So this that was kind of like what made me came to United States, be able to provide my family and go to school, which I did many years later. I went to METC, Madison College, and I got my associate in business management. And I wanted to continue to pursue higher education, get my eventually get to my master's, but it's a little bit difficult because I need to work and pay bills and whatnot. I wasn't able to qualify for DACA because I was 4 years older. I was 34 at the time. I think it was 2012. Mm-hmm. So I was older, so I couldn't apply
for
that.
So you were too old to apply for DACA?
Excuse me. No, that's fine. Yeah, I was all old to apply for DACA. So I have nothing. Yeah. So that's not an excuse for me, actually. It's never been an excuse to continue to reach my goals and my dreams. I've done it. I'm very proud of myself to where I'm standing now. Eventually, I want to get my, continue towards my higher education when the time allows it.
So you're now working in the Madison area?
I am, yes.
Can you talk about just your type of work? You don't have to identify your employer.
Right. I work as a part-timer for a warehouse, which has allowed me to pretty much keep me afloat with paying my bills and stuff that I need to pay.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Erica?
Well, thank you for having us first. So I kind of want to go back to what Laura was talking about as far as bringing back the main reasons, usually and mainly their social and economic reasons of why our families have made the decision to come here. And in my case, my father used to work at General Electric. He was a supervisor in Mexico City. Mm-hmm. It was a major manufacturer. I think they had over 40,000 people. And then in the 90s, a lot of manufacturing industries were moving to China. And that happened with General Electric. So they moved to China, closed down shop, and then just a lot of people lost their jobs throughout Mexico, not just in Mexico City. And there were a lot of people who were unemployed. The economy was already a little shaky. And then during the 90s, the economy just got worse and worse and worse. My father could not find a job, even though he had experience at a pretty well-known manufacturer as a supervisor. And he decided to come to the U.S. He thought it was going to be temporary. He thought, I'm going to go make a little bit of money, save money, and then we'll see what happens in the meantime. And that's the case for a lot of families. But then we realized, well, what is my father going to come back to? There's not a whole lot of possibilities, even if you have the education. In Mexico, if you don't know the right people, it's almost impossible to find a job. There's also a lot of corruption. There's also a lot of crime due to the economic situation. So my father came, and he was here for 2 years. And then after that, he decided that we should come as well, the rest of the family. And I was 12 at that time. And I was in middle school. That was pretty difficult. Mm-hmm. It's already difficult to be a teenager and then to come to a different country completely. It's like a different world. And I was very aware of my status from day one. It's like everything kind of screams at you that you're not part of the society and that you cannot integrate in it and that you're not the same and you don't have the same opportunities. And you're aware of that. I was never at any moment did I think that I was here, documented. And for a while, I just kind of wanted to give up. I was like, why should I have good grades? What am I going to do? Like, why should I continue in high school? And then I had kind of this little epiphany, and so I started to want to become, I was like, I don't care about my status. I'm going to do something with my life. So I went to college. I went to UW-Whitewater, and I got my bachelor's degree. I had to pay out-of-state tuition, international rates, which are very expensive. So I had to do that out of pocket, and I graduated from there. And then after that, when DACA came around, I decided to enroll, and then I got a job at Head Start. And then now I'm working at the University of Wisconsin here in Madison at the Wisconsin Center for Education Research, and I'm also getting my master's degree in Milwaukee, UW-Milwaukee.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Fascinating stories. How about each of your families? Do you still have family members that are back in Mexico? And have you had family members that have actually been deported? Do you want to go first this time, Erica?
Sure. So my immediate family, the majority of them are here. My sister has DACA, and I also have cousins that are here. And other than my sister and then two of my cousins' sons, we have DACA, but everybody else is undocumented. And every day is a struggle. Like, I'm in contact with them on a very regular basis. We're very close. And my dad, because of that, he left 5 years ago. He couldn't take it anymore. Like, having to drive around in his car and know that he might get pulled over at any time. And if he has an officer who's not the most knowledgeable of the situation, you know, he might get put in jail, and like eventually, you know, he thought, eventually I'm going to get deported. So he just lived with that constant fear, and he didn't want to do that anymore.
So he went back to Mexico?
Yeah, so I haven't seen him for 5 years.
For 5 years.
Mm-hmm. And I'm very close with him, so it's very difficult for me.
Thank you.
Because she can't just go back.
I can't go because
What would happen if you went back to Mexico?
I would not be allowed.
You'd be not be allowed to come back, to mm-hmm. return. Thanks for the clarification.
Yeah, there was advanced parole available for a period of time, but there were certain categories, like you had to go for work, or you had to go for humanitarian situations, or if an immediate family member had passed away. And if you didn't qualify for that, then you would not even attempt, because you were allowed to leave the country, that also didn't mean that you were allowed back. Okay. So there was also that risk of not being able to come back. Mm-hmm. And my lawyer advised me to not even touch it.
And Jose, you came with your older brother?
Yes, I did.
So how was your family divided in the United States and still in Mexico?
So at the time when I came here, there was a couple of uncles that were living in Delaware. So we came, I came with my older brother. My mom allowed me to came with him because he was the older one, so he was going to take care of me. Although at that age, I felt like I was the man of the house, so mm-hmm. I could take care of myself. Eventually, I had more family. Nowadays, I have like half of my immediate family lives here, and the other half lives in Mexico. My parents are divorced. They've been divorced for quite some time now. Mm-hmm. I was 14 when they got divorced. So I keep communication with them, and they're always afraid. I mean, back in Mexico or here, my immediate family, we live in constant fear of everything. So every time I get up, I put a mask. You know, I'm always wearing a mask of, like, it's not that I'm, I just don't want people to find out, just for the, so I don't, I guess they don't think that I'm here stealing jobs or that I want to do something bad. It's just that sometimes I'd rather keep that to myself. So people, we tend to judge. A lot of times. So I try not to talk about my situation, legal situation here in this country. I mean, yes, that's pretty much it.
Well, thank you for agreeing to being part of the show. Laura, how was your family's plan?
Yeah, well, I want to answer that, and I just want to go back to kind of what Jose was saying. It is really different when you don't have protection from deportation, which is what DACA provides Erika and I with, and 800,000 other youth across the nation.
Yep.
And an arbitrary cutoff is the only thing that has prevented someone like Jose from benefiting from the same thing. And so the fear is really real. I think we can go back to before DACA of what that felt like. And even now with the political climate, there still is a lot of fear, and not just for ourselves, but for our families. And so that's the case for my parents, who don't have deferred action, and they wouldn't have even qualified for what we call DAPA, which was actually very similar stipulations, but for parents of U.S. citizens. And my parents wouldn't qualify for that either because of the terms that they came under, and I'm also undocumented, so they don't have a U.S. citizen child that they would ever qualify under. And so I think for me, I often fear for my mom and dad. I'm the only child. And so I think about what is going to work like for them, what is, you know, driving to work like for them. Again, we're in a place where in California we're very privileged because in the last 4 years they did pass driver's license for undocumented residents of California. And that's something that people in Wisconsin don't have. So people drive to work here in fear that they're going to get pulled over, just like Erika was saying. And so the rest of my family, like some of my grandparents on my dad's side, and my aunts and uncles and cousins are all in Mexico. And then I have some other people from my mom's side of the family that are either in Virginia or also like North Carolina,
right.
South Carolina, and in California. So we're kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
Some of my family has been able to come from Mexico and visit us here, like my grandparents. My grandpa actually became a U.S. citizen and has tried to petition for my mom, but her petition, she put her petition in 10 years ago. And she's still waiting to hear back. Like, they told her that she was approved, but she got a letter that said that there were no social security numbers available for her kind of visa. And it's hard to understand the systems, because how did I get a social security number before my mom that's been waiting since 2008, right? Mm-hmm. So the immigration system is just really complicated. I think there's a lot of stereotypes that are out there, like, why don't you just get in line and do things the right way? Well, the truth is there is no line. If you're already here, there's definitely not a line. And I think that's the most challenging aspect that people don't understand.
You haven't seen your father in 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was a court ruling this week, Rachel,
yes.
Wasn't there?
Yeah, there was.
So we should get into that a little bit.
Yeah. In regards to that, they've the Supreme Court declined repealing DACA, so it's been postponed for now, and it's described as a temporary victory. What are your thoughts about that?
And where do we go from here?
And where do we go from here?
Legally.
So.
Anybody?
Maybe Erika,
would you like to start? I have mixed feelings, honestly, and I know that we haven't really talked about it much, but it's hard because, yes, it's protecting some of us, especially when I keep hearing that there's more and more youth getting deported or like being put in process of deportation. So this feels like a temporary patch, but that's what it feels like to me. It feels like then, okay, since we have DACA in place for now, then maybe the push for a Clean Dream Act might not be as urgent, and that to me is a little bit alarming, because then it's just that state of limbo that I am. It's very overwhelming to have, and it's been part of my life for so long, or our lives for so long, that I was at a point that I was like, you know what, if I need to get out of the country, that's fine. If I'm gonna stay, that's fine. But at least tell me something, so that I'm not in limbo anymore. Like it's. You don't know exactly what steps to take with your life when that's the case. So, yeah, it's a little bit of a I have mixed feelings about it.
And Jose, you're not enrolled in DACA, so it didn't really apply to you?
I am not.
Okay.
No, I just follow it a little bit since I'm not in
it. I understand.
But I mean, I have a lot of friends that are enrolled in it, which I totally understand. And to me, it makes me think that if I need to move to a different country, because I don't think I'll, going back to Mexico at my age, which I'm 40, it means that I won't be able to get a job, even if I have a degree from here, which is very valid.
You got a business degree from
business degree,
Madison
yeah.
Technical.
I mean, age wise, you won't be able to. I won't be able to get a job at all. So, which makes me think. Well, I don't really want to go back to Mexico, especially with the economical situation and everything going on down there. I would think I will go to a different country. So I've been kind of looking into it. I think a Dream Act will be awesome because I think even myself will be able to apply for it, but DACA, I'm out of the picture.
Laura, was that federal court decision this week any sidestep or any victory in this national debate?
I think it's a little bit of both. So just very much what Erica and Jose were saying, it does protect people. It allows people to reapply. So we definitely are encouraging people to apply to renew. So if you've never applied for DACA, you can. So we have youth that are graduating from high schools right now that don't have that opportunity, that are going to struggle if they're looking to go to college or if they're looking to work. It's going to be much more difficult for them to get out there in the real world, right? Because they don't have access to a social security number, access to a driver's license, access to health insurance, access to any of these things that DACA makes it a lot more accessible for you to access. And so in that regard, you're still leaving a lot of people out of the picture. So if you think of youth, but then if you think of people like Jose, right? Like, he could definitely benefit, and there's a lot of people whom would be included if we passed the Clean Dream Act, which was put into the Senate, introduced into the Senate back in September 2017. So this has been out there. I think the part that's difficult is, yes, it allows people like myself to reapply. I'm actually in the process of reapplying because my permit was going to expire in August. And I had thoughts of, am I going to have to drop out of my PhD program? I'm not going to be able to see clients anymore. I'm teaching at the university. I would not be able to teach any longer. My driver's license would expire. I would have to move back home to California. And that's because I wouldn't be able to travel. So I also wouldn't be able to travel back and forth anymore. And so it impacts our lives in so many ways. So in that regard, yes, this is a victory for those who are already in the system. But there's also been a delay. Like, this was announced back since September 5th of last year, and Congress has not taken action. So in that regard, this is not a victory because it only allows for Congress to put this back even further. Mm-hmm. And how much more are we going to be left in limbo? How much more are we going to have to wait? How much longer are we going to have to make people like Jose, you know, like question, like, do I need to leave the country because there's no opportunity for me here?
How do you feel when you hear a conservative quoted on maybe a news show saying, yes, but sorry, but you are here illegally? Give me your short response to that because time's getting away from us here. Laura? When you hear that, you're here illegally, so how do you feel when someone says that?
I would say, what would you do if you had to put a roof over your family's head and food on the table for your family? You would come here without documentation if that was the only way you could come here, and there was no other way for my family to be here.
That's a great answer. Jose?
I think that goes back and forth. I mean, we all came at some point. We all came to this country pretty much the same way. I mean, whether you were born here, second, third, fourth generation, someone did at some point, looking just for a better future.
Thank you, Erica.
Along the same lines, but that the immigration system is extremely complicated, and that the majority of times, depending on your circumstance, there is no line, like Laura was saying.
Okay. Rachel, you have the next question?
Oh, yes. So do you think both parties are to blame for this kind of impasse that we've reached on DACA?
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. There's plenty of blame to go around.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think part of the reference point here is the Senate just began a week of debate trying to find a consensus. And Illinois Senator Democrat Durbin has been working on this for, I think, 15 years. Mm-hmm. And the Senate could not arrive on anything, could not pass a bill. So both parties to blame?
Yeah.
Are they? Okay.
I think we know for the most part where some Republicans stand, but we had a bipartisan solution mm-hmm. be brought to the table, like I mentioned, in September, and that wasn't taken up on, right? Because people want to attach a border wall to it. People want to attach, like, militarization of the border, mm-hmm. and our community will not stand for that. And I do think that some Democrats push back on that and say that's not what we want, but that comes from youth. There have been youth nationwide spending their lives in D.C., advocating and lobbying for this. So the pushback that Democrats are giving come from the youth that are saying, we will not take this anymore. We will not be used as pawns to provide or pay for your border wall and border militarization. And one of the things that I think is disheartening is that Democrats are not progressive. I think we need to stand up and say it's all, right? Like, not all or nothing, or, well, we're going to compromise with you here, because we have statistics that show that 80% of U.S. citizens believe that undocumented people outside of just DACA folks, so 11.2 million undocumented people that reside in the United States, deserve a comprehensive immigration reform. So why hasn't Congress taken this up? So it goes even beyond DACA, right? So we have mm-hmm. a unique
yes.
population here
yes.
that's already in the system, that it would be easy to provide documentation, a pathway towards citizenship for them. But you have statistics and national polls that show that 80% of U.S. citizens believe that as a nation of immigrants, we need to provide a pathway to citizenship to the 11.2 million whom are already in this country, and we have not taken action. I absolutely believe this is a bipartisan failure.
And my follow-up question, you mentioned the border wall. When Republicans in Washington, the President and Senator Tom Cotton, say, we can offer a path to citizenship for 1.7 million Dreamers if there's funding for a border wall, how do they link those two issues? How do you feel when those issues are linked? Erica?
I completely disagree with it.
Okay, thank you.
Especially being used as a bargaining chip for that. Like, oh, we're going to give you this, but because of this that we're giving you, then it's like they're taking the blame off of themselves to put it onto us. I won't stand for that.
Any PSs on that, Jose? Or
in addition to that, I think it will just be a waste of money. It's totally a waste of money that can be used towards better things for this country, for the better of the country itself.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what do you think a fair path to citizenship would look like, in your opinion? You want to start?
Yeah, I think that Clean Dream Act has a really great model for it.
Mm-hmm.
As Clean Dream Act would be passed, then you would apply for a legal residency, and then after 5 years, you would be applied to be able to be a citizen. And then obviously with both of those, you have to apply and you have to meet the requirements. So I feel that that's fair, as long as it would be the Clean Dream Act, where there's no border wall attached to it, higher militarization attached to that.
Jose, your feeling?
Yeah, I think Dream Act, not used to include. I feel like I'm out of the picture here because of my situation compared to them, their stories. So I think
they have different legal status, is
right,
what you're saying.
Yes.
Excuse me.
Sorry. And I think that there's, like me, there's many others, I mean, older people, that the ones to succeed and want to have the opportunity to get a higher education. So we also have to think of those people. And I think I'm here because today, because I want to represent that percentage of people who are older, and just because you are this age doesn't mean that you can reach your goals and go for a higher education. To prove, not just only myself, but others, that I can be a good citizen and provide to the community as well. Okay. So, yes.
And Laura, when you hear path to citizenship, how do you respond?
Comprehensive and inclusive immigration reform for 11.2 million. I think that we need to push for that, and I think that we need to stop having arbitrary cutoffs, because we see what happens when we do that. And unfortunately, I think the Clean Dream Act is what we need to go after right now, because it's what's already on the table. It's bipartisan. We just need to say yes to it. We just need to pass it through Congress and hope that, you know, 45th would sign off on that.
Yeah.
But I think beyond that, we can do better. And I think that that's truly what America is about, is providing opportunity. Nobody's asking for a handout. We're just asking for an opportunity to be able to live here and be here and work hard the way we have been for years.
Okay, we're almost out of time, so I have a final question. I want you to dream. I want you to cast a personal career vision. If you're allowed to stay in the country, and however it works out, you know, none of us are going to control that. 5 or 10 years from now, how will you be a contributing member of American society? Cast your own personal career vision. Laura.
I'm going to be running for Congress someday.
You are?
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Yes.
That would change it. That would take a change in the law, wouldn't
it? Yes, it would. I would have to be a citizen to be able to run for Congress.
So you want to be running for Congress?
Well, I'll make my way through Assembly, State. No, I'll get there.
I love hearing people talk about visions.
A businessman, definitely.
A businessman.
Yes. Finish my degree in business management. Go to business school. And own my own business at some point.
Erica, cast a dream, your career dream.
I think I'm already in it. What I do for my job, it's what I love to do. But more than that, more than the career, it would be a career with freedom. Currently at my job, I would not be able to travel internationally, which a lot of my colleagues do. So beyond career, I would say living with freedom for myself and then others around me, which I don't remember what that feels like. I don't remember what freedom feels like. And having that in my life would be just a dream.
Yeah. Wow. Yes. Thank you. There's no important debate in America right now than the debate over dreamers. So I want to thank Laura and Jose and Erica for sharing their stories. Rachel, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, Steve.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.